Welcome to episode 46 of Behaviorally Speaking, a podcast featuring board-certified behavior analysts Angela Nelson and Kristen Bondi. On this episode, they talk about all things puberty, from tips for broaching the topic to managing those unexpected questions. And now, here are your hosts, Angela Nelson and Kristen Bondi.
Hello and welcome to our 46th episode of Behaviorally Speaking. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Angela Nelson, board-certified behavior analyst and mother of two.
And I'm Kristen Bondi, also a board-certified behavior analyst and mother of three. Hey, Angie, how's it going?
It is good. I think I'm probably one of the rare parents that actually says, I like talking about this topic that we're going to dive into today.
Wow. Yeah, you might be, because I was actually reading through and thinking, because I'm not there yet. It's a spoiler alert, which you probably know from the title, everyone. It says puberty, but we're not there yet over here. And so I know when we were prepping for this, I was like, Oh man, yeah. I'm going to have these conversations. So I think that's good that we have two completely different, we're on two ends of the spectrum here.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I'm excited. We've definitely already fallen into the conversations in our house about puberty. This month, actually, my fifth grader goes into the next section of human growth and development, something like that, at their school system. We were reminiscing about last year's, and there's a jazzy tune that goes, meet the new you, meet the new you. And my mom was over, and my mom was just cracking up. But yeah, so it's just fresh in our minds. So this is a very apropos topic. But so today we are going to be talking about approaching discussions of puberty. And for those of you that want more of a technical definition, puberty is the stage of life where the body of a child transitions into an adult body that is capable of sexual reproduction. We will just add in some extra elements here too, which is we want to talk about the emotional side or emotional transition that also is usually paired with this stage of life. So we'll dive into both today. This conversation, the puberty conversation, oftentimes will flow into deeper conversations about relationships and sex and so on and so forth. So today we're going to kind of focus on the nuts and bolts, the earlier stages of puberty.
Yeah. And then maybe a follow-up on just like relationships and how to build healthy relationships. What do those look like? And maybe focusing more on teens. And I know we've done like a teen podcast, but I was talking with someone the other day about it and they were like, oh, my teen, I just don't know what to do. And so I feel like we can never stop talking about teens. So that might be a good follow-up one to this. This year.
Make a note.
Yes. Yeah. So this one, you know, as we just said in the beginning, you know, like it can be, I think every parent is going to feel a little bit differently about this topic. And so like many things that we discuss with our kids, it can be personal. And some families I talk to are so open. And I love that. They're like, no, we tell our kids everything. We want them to know everything. We're an open book. And then you have families who are like, nah, we just don't want to have those discussions, and we kind of shy away from it. And then you have like everything in between. I'm sure everyone listening is kind of falls somewhere on that scale. And also you had mentioned schools bringing this subject into schools. Yeah. And I know when we were prepping, you had said, you had actually said human growth and development. And I was like, so they still do that? I was thinking about it. I kind of like fell back into like fifth grade. And I think I remember exactly where I was sitting when you said it. And I was like, oh, I remember this. but I feel like, and then I think I asked you, like, do parents have to consent to have their kids, you know, in that class? Is that right?
So I think I understand it to be quite different depending on where you are. At least in California, this day and age, they do a lot of stuff together. Everybody learns about everything in one classroom. They don't separate out kids. And I believe I just had to sign something. Now that I think of it, it's kind of an expectation. And I believe our district is like, if you want to opt out, sign this form, you can opt out.
Right.
But,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know if many people do opt out, at least here in this part of the country. So
yeah,
we start last year. So fourth grade, they started with some like basic stuff. And I think it was the same even when I was a kid in California. We had the mother-daughter tea, which is what it was called. Now they've, you know, evolved and expanded to just, you know, in the classroom, the teacher and the school nurse kind of just talks to everybody and it's not separate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like it's a good thing to have, right? And I also have parents who will come to me and say, and I know we'll get into this, but, you know, some parents who are like, I don't want to have this conversation. And sometimes I'll say, well, is the school having this conversation? Because then that's your in, right? You know it's happening in school. I would imagine that in some schools, they might even send you some of the curriculum or what are they teaching? So you know as the parent. And then you can follow that up with the conversations. And even if it's just like, do you have any questions about what you learned today? But I feel like that's, I think a lot of parents, and maybe including myself, maybe not now after all this research, but might lean on the school to do some of that teaching and then you can kind of follow suit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, our district puts it out on the website, the videos. And last year, my older daughter and I, we just watched the videos ahead of time. I asked her, you know, are you interested taking a look at it? And we can watch it together if you have any questions. So that way,
That's perfect.
When it comes to the classroom, she'd already seen everything. She already knew what to expect.
Oh, that's
so that's
a good
kind
idea.
Of a cool. Yeah, they host it live if people want to come and view it together as a group and ask questions. But they also have the videos on the website. So I feel like they have at least here in Southern California, they have a good system for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Oh, well, stay tuned. In 2 years, I'll be able to let you know where we're at with that.
Yeah.
With my oldest.
Nice.
What's Florida looking like?
Yeah. Well, so let's kind of get into it. We did a bunch of different, you know, research activities here. And research, really, we saw some consensus that the research is saying it is a good idea to start discussions early, ideally before puberty sets in, especially for girls, as it relates to things like getting a period, which is generally on average right now around 12 to 13, but could be as young as 9 years old. In general, puberty, according to the medical field, puberty happens usually between the ages of as early as 8 to kind of 14. It looks like we're seeing that it's actually starting earlier these days, and that's attributed to a couple different factors. But keep in mind, too, kids are also exposed at school and at TV, or in TV programs and stuff, sooner than you might think. And may want to be the one to kind of get in there and circumvent that and influence with correct information. I think it's also important to mention, too, kids are really curious at a young age, even when it just comes to bodies in general. So it is recommended to use correct terminology as soon as possible. And then approaching it, knowing that curiosity is totally normal. It's best to not make those conversations shameful, right? Because that could have implications down the road, right? Mm-hmm. We want to establish ourselves as trusted people that they can come to. They won't be shamed or felt, you know, or made to feel embarrassed about asking these questions. And we're going to talk more about that. But it is a good time at a very young age to normalize bodies and what happens to our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, when you had mentioned they're going to be exposed to this at school. And it's interesting because we said before how parents will differ in the information that they give their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I think I was just at like doing like a play date or something with my middle child who's 5. And I think one of the moms was sharing a story or something of we've got older kids too, right? But she was sharing some stories of her older kids.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other moms was like, I'm so sorry, but I accidentally my kid asked me where babies came from. And then I told him. And so now he's probably going to tell your child. And I'm really sorry kind of thing. And I was just like, oh, man, because that was their older brothers. Right. So I'm like, OK, and now it's going to come to my son and then it's going to come to my 5-year-old. And OK, here we go. But it's just so interesting because, you're right. Like, kids are going to hear about these things from somewhere. And so I think as soon as you're comfortable having these conversations, I think it's, you know, it's important to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Keeping it age appropriate, though, I think that
absolutely
is important, right? So like that the question usually does come up, where do babies come from? Keeping it, you know, short and succinct and just enough information that developmentally they can understand, but there will become a point and I would say in many cases where, like we had in our house, we were actually driving in the car and my kids were like, yeah, but how does a baby actually get in there? Like, mom, I understand, but they want to know a little bit more as they get older, and you can kind of, you know, it we're going to get to this, but it's ongoing conversations. It's not a one and done sort of thing. I will mention too, something that happened in our family. One of the reasons from personal experience of why it is important to have discussions is my mom always shared with us that when my grandma was younger and she got her first period, she thought she was dying because her mom did not say anything about puberty and what naturally occurs in bodies. And so my grandma made a commitment for her children. She had three, you know, they had a big family. She had three girls, and she made it a priority to be very open and honest with my mom and my aunts. And so my mom did the same for us. And so I grew up in a family where it was very normalized. We talked about it early and often. And when these sort of changes occurred, it was like, oh, okay, this is no big deal. This is expected. And it's not something to be embarrassed or ashamed about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's such a good point. And I love that they did that. And then it kind of goes back to our podcast last month on, like, when we were talking about parenting styles and things, it's like we really do kind of revert back to like what we learned.
Yeah.
So that's totally a perfect example there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get into the tips. And I will say that was our first tip, or at least part of it. So hopefully everyone was listening to your story. So the first one, when we were doing some research and thinking, well, how do we support our kids and start, you know, talking about puberty? We came up with making sure to normalize that this happens. I think that's probably the key takeaway there, because a lot of times, like you mentioned, right, kids might feel insecure or they might feel alone, right? And especially for the kids who they're the first one out of their little group of friends, or friends aren't talking about it. So, you know, especially if they're the ones that need a training bra first, or they get their period first, or what's this acne, or my cracking voice, right? And I think that could be embarrassing sometimes for kids if they have no, you know, they have no information about this, or even little information about this. I think that could be scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to mention, it's, you know, of course, we're talking now about, you know, physical changes, and I think those are obvious and we can see those, but kids are, and I actually tell parents this all the time, be mindful of the internal changes, like with emotions and hormones, right? So I'll have parents come to me, and their daughters or sons, they're like 10, 11. And they're like, I don't know what is going on. Like, they are just like moody and like being so rude. And I just want to punish them, right? Like, I'm so angry. And I'm like, well, let's think about their age. Like, I wonder what else might be going on here that's causing this hormonal shift or this change in attitude. So I think that's really important to pay attention to.
100%. Yeah. I think this theme is woven into a lot of our podcast episodes, which is take a step back and put yourself in your kids' shoes. You know, being a teenager or a preteen is incredibly stressful and uncomfortable. So we have to recognize, like, they're kind of juggling a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think just keeping in mind that, you know, kind of figure out what's going on internally and externally with your kids, normalizing it, having that conversation. And something else that I'll mention, and we'll give a few at the end, but sometimes it's helpful if you lean on books or videos or just any specific sites, you know, things that talk about this for you, for those parents that are feeling a little bit like, oh, I don't even know how to have this conversation. There are a ton of resources on this. So we'll mention some at the end for you all if you want them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So going into our next tip, it's important to be prepared for questions, ideally before they happen. You might be surprised. Maybe no questions come. That is a reality as well. But in many cases, if you have established yourself as a trusted source of information, you're likely going to get some questions. So practicing what to say ahead of time might be good, especially if you did not grow up in a household where these sort of conversations were spoken about, you know, more freely.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're recognizing in yourself that you're getting embarrassed or really uncomfortable, it is a good idea to practice or role play with somebody else. You also want to do some research about what might come up. So maybe some FAQs. What are some FAQs for kids in terms of puberty? Establishing yourself as a trusted source, as we said. It's okay also if you don't know the answer to kind of pause. Maybe even say, you know what, I'm not actually sure about that. I think that's an important question, but maybe we can do some research together, or we can ask your doctor, your pediatrician. It's always a good idea to loop in another trusted source, like a medical professional. And also that person can serve as another source of accurate and reputable information besides you is, hey, you know, you can always go to your doctor, your family doctor, your pediatrician to get some support or questions answered. And then it's important to remember that them coming to you is actually a good thing. Uh-huh. If you think about it, your initial knee-jerk reaction might be, oh my gosh, no, why is this happening? But if you think about it, you've done a good job of establishing yourself as a trusted source of support because they're coming to you with these questions. And be mindful and think ahead and recognize that if you shut it down, or you have a negative reaction or a big reaction or an embarrassed reaction, they still have those questions. It's not going to squash the curiosity. They're probably going to look elsewhere for information. And that actually goes with a lot of concepts that we talk about, right?
If you are
really quick to have a super harsh punishment on things, I think we talked about this in the lying episode. How to teach your kids to be good liars, or maybe they go elsewhere. So this is just another reminder to be very mindful of your reactions when kids come to you for questions, and be prepared ahead of time so you can be more thoughtful and have an appropriate response.
Totally. And I think that, you know, even taking it one step further, like you said, like I think talking about drugs and sex, like all of that stuff, this is what your reaction now is actually, I think for kids, helping them see like what your reaction might be in the future.
Yeah.
If they come to you and say, hey, so-and-so said this at school. What does this mean? Right. Mm-hmm. Turning into, hey, so-and-so offered me this at school. What does this mean?
Right.
Like I feel like it's, it's definitely really important. Yeah. So the next tip here, and I think this one, again, this can kind of pertain to a lot of different areas of concern for parents. But as it pertains to puberty, I think talking to other parents who have been through it, that can be so helpful, because I'm sure many parents have talked to somebody and they're like, oh, man, let me tell you what I wish I knew. Let me tell you what I wish I learned, or someone told me before. Right. And then I think those are the best parents to talk to, because then you get some of those, you know, kind of insider tips, right? Like, hey, you've been through this. Like, what did you learn? What worked well? What didn't? I think that could be so good.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did talk a little bit about, and we know that a lot of our listeners have kids with either intellectual or developmental disabilities. And so talking with people in your network about ways to approach puberty for this population of kids can be really a really great way to get some insights. I'll just share that I was working with a teenage girl many years ago when I was doing in-home therapy, and she was more significantly impacted by autism. And so puberty was a tricky time in terms of the whole kind of menstruation process, right? And having to wear a pad or a sanitary napkin. And we had to do lots of practice in terms of what that's like and the process of using a pad. And we got creative with like markers and, you know, we just practice. And we did that before she got her period, because we were anticipating that was going to come. And so when it did come, it was not nearly as big of a transition, and she was ready, and her mom was feeling good about it and confident. And her mom shared that with some of her other friends in her network, and they're like, oh my gosh, yeah, we're going to do that with our child too. So being able to connect with parents who've been there, who've tried some cool things, can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, connecting on how to explain it to your child, right? Like mm-hmm. like you said, I love your ideas of, hey, let's get in there. Let's create some systems of support. Maybe it's visual support, or maybe it's, you know, practice, rehearsal. But even, you know, cognitively, how can we help your kid understand what's going on with their body? Yeah. I feel like that's a question I get often from parents. I think we mentioned it on another podcast episode, but it may have been the last one or the one before, but amaze.org is a great site for this, all things kind of pertain to what we're talking about. But yeah, really good website. And I definitely think that for kids, maybe even, oh, and another thing you could do too is maybe even asking the school. So like in the special yeah. education, you know, whoever the coordinator is, like if they're doing it in fourth and fifth grade for their general education, seeing what special education offers as well could be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. How they might be adapting mm-hmm. to meet the needs of those students. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think sometimes parents forget to partner with schools. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I think it's a good reminder to say, hey, newsflash, schools are experts on kids this age. You know, yeah. they deal with kids this age all day, every day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the administrators and teachers that work in middle school in particular. Gosh, they are such experts, and they know, you know, everything there is to know about this age. So don't forget to lean into that and take, you know, take advantage of these great resources, these mm-hmm. people that know so much about this stage of life.
Totally. Yeah. And that applies to a lot of things. I'll have parents say to me, hey, do you have any storybook recommendations for like their fourth grader or something? Or what are good book series?
And yes.
I'm like, ooh, what about the reading teacher? How's your, what about the English teacher? And they're like, oh,
right.
Yes.
Or the librarian. Like, yeah. That's or their job.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it is. Yeah. Don't forget about the other resources.
My kids love their school librarian. They're like, oh, Mrs. So-and-so bought this whole new book series and she wanted me to test it out. And I'm like, are you like best friends with the librarian? Like, yes, I do go in there every day. So, aww. Okay. Well, okay. So moving on to one of our last tips. We've just blown through this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We touched on this earlier, but it is important to keep these conversations going and early and often. And the conversation door open, because it will be easier later. This will more naturally flow into the more complex topics about relationships, about sex, about consent, you know, maybe even things like birth control, those sorts of things. So mm-hmm. if you have these conversations and they flow, it will be more natural. You can also prevent the dreaded the talk. We never really had the talk in my family, because it right. was just kind of a natural progression. And then when we did actually get to the point where we were talking about the specifics around sex, it was kind of more of a, oh, okay, yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, mm-hmm.
like, right,
it wasn't right. this jarring, shocking thing that everybody was so uncomfortable with, because my kids had already been kind of primed to talk about bodies and things like that. So glad the approach that I took. I feel like they're educated and it's normalized and it's not scary or taboo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 That's smart. Just to start soon and mm-hmm. You know, use your resources and open the door.
Yeah.
I had a thought and I just lost it. I think this might be the first time this has happened to me on here.
Hmm.
A good one.
Maybe do your book recs and then it might come.
It's gonna come back to me. I know. It was really good too. I was like, oh, this goes really in line with this what you just said, and then I lost it. So anywho, if it doesn't come back to me, then I'll just, you know, mention it next month. Cliffhanger for everyone.
Yeah.
What was Kristen gonna say?
About puberty.
Yeah, about puberty. I don't know. I might be gone for good now, but we'll see. It might come back. There are a lot of different books, and I was looking this up. I think I'll mention a few, but as I was looking it up too, if everyone is not familiar with Brightly, it's a really great site, and you can go
Brightly.
Like, yeah. So Brightly. Oh no, sorry, I was spelling my daughter's name with an L-E-Y. Brightly. Brightly. Yes, so it's all it's all books. So it's basically like a virtual library. Yeah. And then you go in there and you can search any topic, and you can even sort by age. Sometimes when parents do ask me for their book recommendations for their fourth grader, you can go in and look at like, okay, teens and tweens. But
I'm going to use that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. But I was actually looking it up for discussions on puberty. And there is, I think her name is Mayim.
Oh, Mayim Bialik.
Yes. Like, thank you.
She was Mayim. On Blossom, that show from like the 90s. Yeah.
And she's now the new Jeopardy host.
I love her. She's like a real life neuroscientist. I follow her on social media. Well, she's fantastic.
She has written two books on this, which I didn't know until I just looked on here. So she has Girling Up and Boying Up, which I was like, oh my gosh, how cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I haven't read them, so I can't say, you know, if they're amazing or not. But I feel like it might be more of a modern day kind of take on some of these things, which could be really good for parents. So yeah, definitely look those up. And then when we were doing some research, a couple that came up, which so some families might be familiar with, there's It's Not the Stork. it's for our younger kids. So it's a book about girls, boys, babies, bodies, families, and friends. And that's by Robbie Harris. And then for older kids, which I've seen this one before, it's What's Happening to Me, A Guide to Puberty by Peter Malley? It's M-A-Y-L-E. I should probably start looking up how to say people's names better before I say them. And then the other one is It's Perfectly Normal, Changing Bodies, Growing Up, Sex, and Sexual Habits, also by Robbie Harris. So... there were a bunch. So a lot of times parents will ask me and I'll say just, you know, look on there and then read about it a little bit and then pick the one that feels most appropriate for you. What feels right. And then I'll always say, read the books. And I actually have some families who I'll say, they'll say, I think I'm just going to like give them the book. And then I'm like, that's fine. But just as long as you're like, do you have any questions? What can I help you with? Or maybe you at least read it first. Things like that. Because you've got parents all over who are like, can I just like give it to them? And I'm like, well, you might need to, you know, provide a little support. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking too, one book that a couple people have recommended to me. I have it on my Goodreads app. I don't know if we've talked about Goodreads. That's where I track all my fun books. But it's called The Care and Keeping of You. It's an American Girl book.
Oh,
it's got really good
reviews.
Yeah, it's a good one for girls to read. And then we've mentioned this in the past, but Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood. Yeah, that's by Dr. Lisa Damore. That's a really good book if you're kind of sailing towards adolescence. That's for the parents to read, of course, but it's another really, really good one. I really like Dr. Lisa Damore, and I follow her podcast too, Ask Dr. Lisa. So, yeah.
I can't even make this up. I had a parenting consultation today, and the parent told me that they were reading that book, and I was like, oh, yay. Untangled.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, great. I was like, I hear so many good things about that book. I want to tell everybody that has a preteen.
Yeah, you got to read it.
Is it just for girls?
This one is. Yes, this one is. But there's she does recommendations. She does recommendations for, you know, boys, and on her podcast too. She doesn't just hone in on girls. Okay. It's kind of So yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of resources out there. So I think for everybody's comfort level, you know, depending on how comfortable you are or not so comfortable, there's definitely resources. But that's all we got. That's it for today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us on our 46th episode of Behaviorally Speaking. On our next episode, we will be discussing preparing your child and you for their transition out of the home. Until then, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode.
You've been listening to Behaviorally Speaking with Angela Nelson and Kristen Bondi, brought to you by Rethink Care. Find out more at rethinkcare.com. You can find past podcast episodes under the Resources tab. We also invite you to subscribe, follow, like, and leave us feedback wherever you listen to podcasts. Your feedback helps us prepare topics and content for future episodes. Until next time, have a great day.